Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the Endocrine News Podcast. There are plenty of studies showing that chemicals found in the environment can directly impact human health. Some new research finds that certain environmental compounds may trigger early female puberty. Joining me today to talk about that research is Dr. Natalie Shaw, Alaska Clinical Research Scholar and Principal Investigator of the Pediatric Neuroendocrinology Group in the Clinical Research Branch of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Dr. Shaw is an author of a study recently published in Endocrinology entitled Identification of Environmental Compounds That May Trigger Early Female Puberty by Activating Human Gonadotropin-Releasing Hormone Receptors and Kisspeptin Receptors. So your study mentions that there is an alarming trend toward earlier puberty in girls. Can you tell us more about that trend and what may be influencing it?
Yeah, so there's been a trend of both earlier breast development in girls and a slightly smaller trend of earlier menarche, or a girl's first period, in girls. And I would say this has been happening over a number of decades, and it's less clear if the same thing is happening in boys. But it's happening at a relatively rapid pace, which suggests that it's not related to genetic effects, but is caused by something in the environment.
Why might these environmental compounds have a significant impact on human health?
Well, a lot of the compounds, especially the ones that we study as endocrinologists, are known as endocrine disrupting compounds, which means that they can either activate or inhibit parts of the endocrine system. So we know, for example, there are a number of compounds that act at either at the estrogen receptor or androgen receptor.
And your study focuses on whether an environmental compound could activate the kisspeptin and or the gonadotropin-releasing hormone receptor specifically. Why did you want to study those two?
Well, I think there have been a lot of focus, like I said, on the estrogen and androgen receptors, and that makes sense that there could be compounds activating the estrogen receptor, and that's what could be causing early breast development in girls. But puberty doesn't start at the level of the breast. It starts in the brain, in the hypothalamus. And so I thought it'd be interesting to look specifically at some of the proteins and receptors in that pathway to see if any of the compounds in our environment could be acting directly in the brain.
Can you tell us about your study and what you and the team did?
I collaborated with a group of investigators at another branch of the NIH called NCATS, which is National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences. And these investigators are toxicologists who have access to something called the TOX21 10K library, which consists of 10,000 compounds that are known to exist in the environment and that humans are exposed to. And so we were able to do a screen of these 10,000 compounds and basically look at whether or not they were activating the GnRH receptor or kisspeptin receptor using a human cell line. And then we validated some of those studies using human hypothalamic neurons and zebrafish.
And the TOX21 10K compound library, that sounds really interesting. So there's 10,000 compounds in there. Can you tell us a little bit more about how something might make the list?
I'm not sure exactly how the list is compiled, but I do know that there has to be a significant amount of evidence, again, that these are compounds in our environment, and then they'll look at what's known. So a lot of those compounds are already known to act at estrogen receptor, androgen receptor, or to be common things that humans are exposed to through cosmetic products, or they could be dietary supplements or pharmaceuticals, things like that.
And what did you find in your study? And I always love asking this, did anything in your results surprise you?
Well, all of it was surprising because I think no one's really looked at these receptors and the potential for the environment to interact with them. I think the most interesting finding was this compound called musk ambrette, which is known to be in fragrances and cosmetic products. And we found that that activated this kisspeptin receptor. We also found a class of compounds called cholinergic agonists, which activated the GnRH receptor. And that was interesting, but those compounds are things that children are less likely to encounter in their daily lives.
So I'd love to ask a little bit more about the muscambrate and the cholinergic agonists. You know, you mentioned fragrances and that the cholinergic ones might not be as widespread in exposure, but it sounds like we talk about fragrances and things like that, that they might be more prevalent. Would it be true to say that muscambrate is not an entirely uncommon thing for people to end up having exposure to?
The way things are these days, you can kind of buy whatever you want off Amazon and no one is really checking what's in there. So I don't know, these regulations that exist only go so far, and I don't want to overstate what the exposure is. I think we really don't know, and we don't know in our children in the U.S., are they being exposed to this compound in cosmetic products or not? And that's something we need to study next.
You often hear about these endocrine disrupting chemicals and, you know, how exposures can have a myriad of different effects on the body. But one thing I've often heard is that the amount that you're exposed to might have an effect in a way that you, the one who doesn't study this, might not expect. You know, usually you think, well, if I get exposed a lot, then I'm going to have a lot of effect. But that might not always be the case with endocrine disrupting chemicals. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how even maybe a little bit of a dose can have an effect?
I'm not sure if that's unique to the endocrine system, but we know even with endogenous hormone exposure that sometimes it's not even a long exposure. It could be having an exposure and then the withdrawal of that exposure is actually what can trigger the system. So we see that, for example, in a condition called congenital adrenal hyperplasia, where sometimes it's bringing their hormone levels under control that can somehow actually trigger early puberty.
And when you think about your findings, and like you said, this is something that we haven't really seen much from before, specifically with the gonadotropin-releasing hormone and kisspeptin receptors. You know, what do you think is the take-home message for folks? If you had to summarize, you know, the importance of this research, what would you tell folks?
I think the way we approached this problem was really unique, and it's kind of sets up a pipeline that other people could follow, you know, doing these sort of high throughput screen in a human cell line, validating in human hypothalamic neurons, and then even further in an animal model.
And how do you think these findings might influence your future research?
We are planning to study additional puberty genes using a similar set of experiments and also conducting more experiments in zebrafish using the same transgenic line where basically you can measure the fluorescence of the GnRH neuronal population and look at how compounds might increase or decrease the area of those neurons.
Well, this has been a fascinating study to learn more about. I'm so thankful for you taking the time out of your day to share it with us. I look forward to hearing more in the future. Thank you so much.
That's all for this episode. As always, thank you for listening to the Endocrine News Podcast. If you'd like to hear more of these, check us out on endocrine.org/podcast or Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're enjoying these, please let us know by leaving a review on Apple. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@endocrine.org. Thanks again.
Endocrine News Podcasts are a free service of the Endocrine Society. To learn more or to become a member, visit the Society's website at www.endocrine.org.